Welcome to Streaming Into the Void, where we discuss all the streaming news for the week ending March 22nd, 2024. I'm Kim Hollis, and I'm launching threes and drinking tears.
That'll make sense in a minute.
With me are Tim Bridey, content creator and gamer, sick again for some reason. Aw, Tim.
Lousy smart weather.
Yes. Also, David Mumpower, author of Behind the Ride and streaming media analyst, who probably shouldn't have picked Kentucky in the Final Four.
I regret nothing. Bye, Kentucky.
And the podcast is produced and edited by Raul Burial, who is sofa positive.
That's right, folks. My bottom is now comfortably cupped.
This week, America is watching college basketball, and Warner Brothers Discovery would like it very much if you were watching it on Max.
So should I not have resubscribed to Paramount Plus with Showtime to watch basketball games? Should I not have done that? Sorry, Zaslav.
Nobody knows.
Well, let's see. We had to work this one out, but it looks like you can catch some games on Max and other games on Paramount Plus with Showtime. And for all our international viewers, yes, all of America is watching college basketball right now. Please forgive us.
We were actually doing this before the podcast started, and it was absolutely hilarious because Kim and I did it the easy way. We subscribed to YouTube TV. We've just been watching split screen on YouTube TV. We were actually talking about this in the car last night. It is the easiest March Madness we've ever had. We used to wheel these giant 32-inch TVs that weighed 100 pounds into the same room so that we could watch all the games, didn't we?
Yeah, or we'd have computer screens set up or whatever. Anyways, yes, this is hugely different and much better, much more preferable.
We're all in on the streaming universe. But the thing is, we didn't want to have to jump through the hoops. And you do have to jump through hoops if you do it the way that the people paying for this stuff want you to do it, which is to watch the CBS games, you have to watch Paramount Plus. To watch the TNT, TBS, True TV games, you have to watch Max. And we weren't about to do that. So we just did it the conventional way, which is what we used to call the cable way. Technically, it's streaming, but it's the old form of streaming. And it really exemplifies the challenges being faced right now. And also, if we want to tie it in, why Warner Brothers Discovery, Fox, and Disney are talking about a joint sports-focused skinny bundle. And it's this reason right here where Raul was saying, hey, I'm watching this here. Is that not where I'm supposed to be? And we're like, what? No, what? But what he was saying was right, too. This is, Raul, God help us, a licensing nightmare, isn't it?
That's right. Man, I'm not even going to get into that whole sports bundle thing right now, because honestly, I feel that that was vaporware and it's never actually going to materialize. But if you do want to watch this on Max, they are offering you a 30% discount right now on their yearly plan for new, and apparently a 40% discount for existing customers. It's being marketed as a March Madness promotion, but it really smacks of desperation.
This is a crazy deal right now, but there's no... I still don't see the value in Max right now, because most of the things they have are just going to show up somewhere else at some point.
And as a reminder, when Max announced their Bleacher Report sports package, it was supposed to turn into a paid add-on for Max right now during March Madness. And evidently, they thought so little of it that they decided, no, we're just going to keep this as a free part of Max for the moment until we think we can get enough subscribers for it.
Yeah, someone not subscribed to Max right now, I'm looking at it, there's still a bar on there that says sports add-on on us for a limited time. And then below that, it has the NBA on TNT, the NHL on TNT, March Madness, baseball on TBS, and USA Soccer. Amazing. This is their last gasp. They're not long for this world. I mean, we've been saying that for a long time, but
I think that's slightly hyperbolic, but the chickens have come home to roost. We've been saying for a while now, eventually all the bad decisions they've been making are going to catch up to them, and this is it. This was their plan to monetize, and it has just been completely destroyed. And not only are they not monetizing, now they're so scared about churn that they're discounting. And as Raul is emphasizing, this isn't the normal type of discounting. They're actually saying, if you're a current subscriber, we need to get you locked in for a year. Please sign up for a year, so we'll give you whatever deal you want, because we're losing customers if you don't do this. Their next fiscal earnings report is showing all the signs of being a disaster if this doesn't work. But as we're going to discuss throughout the podcast today, live sports is proving to be a difference maker, and so this is their last gasp.
And David has mentioned this Hulu for Sports, this joint package between Disney's ESPN, Fox, and Warner Bros. Discovery, which has been recently marketed as your one-stop shop for sports by Fox chief executive Lachlan Murdoch. But that's not really the case. For one thing, the NFL's media chief has said, I don't know what he's talking about. If you were to sign up for this package, which of course has not yet materialized, you'd be barely getting half the NFL games. There's a lot of sports you would not be getting on this Hulu for Sports, which honestly has not really seen a lot of progress. There are no contracts. No one seems to have made any agreements related to this package. It sounds like it was a last gasp attempt by Warner Bros. Discovery to try to save their sports offerings. I really don't think that this Hulu for Sports is ever really going to materialize, and Disney's eventually just going to walk away from it because they have something better eventually when they go over the top with ESPN. It's really bad news for Warner Bros. Discovery. Fox is just happy to have been considered. Right now, the sports landscape is a mess, and no one really seems to be making any progress to make any sense of it all.
And everything he just said is absolute truth. But we do have a second aspect of this we should discuss, which is technologically, I mean, I am watching right now. I currently have it pulled up on Paramount Plus. We were trying Max earlier. It works seamlessly. It absolutely does. And I have to say, the frustration, if you're involved with this broadcast, Kim and I have been marveling at the fact that the broadcast crews, they've got Candace Parker, they've got Jay Wright, they've got Charles Barkley, they've got Kenny the Jet Smith talking in between these games. It is a brilliant way to broadcast television. It absolutely is. We're seeing the signs of life here if they can just be smart enough to lean into that. And we know that they're at least toying with it because True TV is about to get an identity switch. And the identity is going to be, it's now basically going to Manning cast all kinds of live sports where it's going to be like the second screen for the main streaming. And you can see those possibilities while we watch this right now. But Warner Bros. Discovery has to survive that long. And we're holding our breath.
And I am curious about that new move for True TV. The fact of the matter is that that only works so long as they have live sports. One of the live sports for which Warner Bros. Discovery has the contract right now is the NBA, and those rights are up for negotiation. So far, it doesn't look like the NBA has made a decision as to which way they're going to go, but it's looking less and less likely that Warner Bros. Discovery is going to retain those rights or as many of those rights as they currently have, which is really going to beg the question, just how much Impractical Jokers can you watch on True TV? And for what it's worth, Warner Bros. Discovery isn't the only Hollywood studio on the brink. As we've mentioned before, Paramount is in trouble as well. Paramount has reportedly received an $11 billion offer this week exclusively for their film and TV studios. But the company's stock fell as chief executive Sherry Redstone indicated she was uninterested in this offer. There could be a couple of reasons for this. One is that Redstone thinks the offer isn't big enough, although $11 billion is quite a premium over the company's market cap at the moment. And given the state of the company, she really shouldn't be turning up her nose to any offer. The other possibility is that Apollo only wants the money-making components of the company. That would leave Redstone with the money-losing or quickly depreciating assets such as the cable and TV networks and still leave her burdened with billions of dollars of debt.
Yeah, we have very different views of how good this offer was. I found it laughably low, and this has been an ongoing thing throughout the podcast where I've always viewed Paramount in bigger terms than Roble. He is absolutely correct, and the stock has been fascinating to watch this week. After the announcement of the offer, the stock went up 10%, and then the instant she said, no, we're obviously not going to take that, we'd still owe $4 or $5 billion, the stock went back down a dollar, which means it's pretty much the same level it was before all this happened, but it's in a constant state of gradual erosion. That's where we're at with this. They do have $15 billion in debt. So if you're not offering them at least $15 billion, it's not much of an offer. And you're basically saying, we think this is the best you can do. If it is, that's just absolutely terrifying for everyone involved because we like Paramount Plus. We are always praising Paramount Plus, and it dies in a lot of these scenarios.
Yeah, it's a shame because it is a good streaming platform. There is good content on it. But the fact of the matter is that Paramount is a studio that cannot continue to lose money the way they're losing with Paramount Plus. It does appear that Redstone is still negotiating a sale of the entire company to David Ellison's Skydance with backing from Redbird Capital and a couple of other investors, but it is proving to be a prolonged negotiation given Paramount's complicated ownership structure. But right now, that seems to be the lifeline that is out for Paramount. If that negotiation fails at this point, you can expect that Paramount's going to be sold for parts.
Byron Allen is right there.
Why will no one take Byron Allen seriously?
All right, Tim, before we talk about the ratings, let's touch on the box office real quick.
So this weekend, we have Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. $16 million on Friday. Okay, sure. I honestly don't know what to think about that. Definitely the second Ghostbusters movie we've had in the last few years. The previous one was 2021. That was Afterlife. And that actually started out with about the same, $16.6 million. So that's down slightly. But, you know, when you consider other factors, especially things like ticket inflation, that's not as great. But it's headed to probably about a $40 million weekend or so.
It's much worse.
Really?
We should say that. Because 2021, you have to remember what the theater experience was like at the time. And we don't have that now. And, you know, we're always saying that the quality of the previous film impacts the opening week of the next one. I don't even think it's that. I just think there isn't enough awareness of that film. Right. And there just wasn't demand for another Ghostbusters thing. And it's a shame because it seemed like they had a good idea for this, didn't they, Tim?
Yeah, I think so. I did not see the previous one, but I heard it was well received. I mean, I kind of wish we really had kept going with the 2016 reboot, but there's reasons for that, even though they performed basically similarly, just with 5 years apart of box office. And it just feels like it's all in the marketing. And that's where studios seem to be cutting, because box office is down and it's actually further decreasing box office.
They paid $25 million more to make the film. Yeah. They're going to get, at best, the same opening weekend of $44 million. You would like to think that they're going to do a lot better globally, where the other film only made $200 million because of everything that was happening in 2021. But they were late on Ghostbusters. There should have been Ghostbusters much, much sooner. And it's regrettable because it's going to be one of those great what might have beens. I actually think, Tim, in a way, that this is just a redux of what happened with Dial of Destiny.
Yeah, that's a fair comparison.
For what it's worth, I'm planning on taking my kids to go see this one this weekend.
Did you see the last one?
I have.
And?
It's a sequel to Ghostbusters with the original cast and a new story. This is essentially what any Ghostbusters fan wants.
I know all the lyrics to the theme song from Ghostbusters 2, so I'm the target audience here, and we have made no discussion of seeing this in theaters, and I think that's kind of telling. All the lyrics. Bobby Brown, baby.
Meanwhile, Dune 2 and Kung Fu Panda 4 still doing pretty well. Dune 2 is now over $220 million domestically. Kung Fu Panda 4 has $120 million domestically, so that's still good news, but yeah, not a good start for Ghostbusters, but I feel like based on the last two, really, there was a ceiling here, and this is about it.
Yeah, and I did read an article earlier today about someone just talking about going to see Dune 2 at the theater and just what a bad experience it was, that basically after doing it, they'd rather watch the movie at home. They said there was like 40 minutes of commercials and then another 30 of trailers. That's just too much. We're paying to see the film, adding commercials on top of everything. I know that the theaters are struggling for money, but it's a lot to ask of an audience, especially if you're coming to sit through a movie for almost 3 hours. Okay, let's talk about the ratings then, Tim.
Okay, we have the Nielsen streaming ratings for Monday, February 19th to Sunday, February 25th, 2024. And I look kind of dumb because last week I was like, well, I don't know what's coming. I know we got a couple weeks before we get Shogun. But yeah, your top show for this week is Avatar The Last Airbender, 2.5 billion minutes for 8 episodes.
Wow.
Right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, didn't see that one coming. I mean, I guess we figured it would do okay, but not that good.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, this showed up on the 22nd of February. So this is just, only, 3 days.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Yeah, does it go higher next week? I can't tell anymore. The pattern has not always been
there.
Who
knows?
But it might very well hang around for a little while. But yeah, didn't see that one coming.
Oof.
Meanwhile, in second, the show that returned last week and was at the top show, Love is Blind, added 3 more episodes and jumped from, under a billion to, 2.4 billion. Really? Okay. I mean, I know that this is on the less offensive end of their dating shows, but yeah, I'm still kind of appalled by this.
The thing that takes me aback here is 79 episodes?
Yes, this is it's on its sixth season.
Oh my God.
The show actually only goes back to 2020. The first season premiered actually in February 2020, right before the world ended. So yeah, I guess this has just been, you know, pandemic viewing for people, and they've stuck with it, and they just keep making them. I'm sure it's cheap, but this one's been in the news for, you know, terrible production process. But really, $2.4 billion. This has never been that high before. What the heck?
Yeah.
I don't know if something happened this season that was like, you have to watch this now if you hadn't before. I have no idea.
Same.
$5 billion for the top two shows on Netflix. Wow.
Yes, Netflix kicked some butt this week, unlike that we've seen in quite some time.
And the other weird thing is, like, there's no similarity between The Last Airbender and Love is Blind, so I can't even, like, find a way to link them that would explain joint viewership. You know, this isn't Barbieheimer.
Yes, in a way, these are two very different shows. Yes.
That would arguably explain why both of them could do roughly $2.5 billion each, because mm-hmm. they were targeted to very different audiences. And that sound you hear, by the way, is all the air being sucked out of the ratings as everything after this just sucked.
Yeah, the Nielsen bar graph just falls off a cliff after this. It's mostly shows we've seen before on the rest of the originals chart. But yeah, the top two shows just dwarf everything else. Because third goes to One Day. That's been here for a few weeks now, 454 million minutes from Netflix. The Tourist returns. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and I didn't expect to see this actually until next week. 338 million minutes, six episodes, because the second season that aired in the UK will now arrive on Netflix for next week's ratings. So I would have expected to show up then, but maybe they were prepping people for it by putting it in a prominent location so people check it out again in time for the second season, because we saw this a few weeks ago. Halo from Paramount Plus is still here, 338 million minutes, now 13 episodes.
Perhaps coincidentally, or maybe intentionally, it seems Paramount Plus has discovered the value of video game adaptations, because this week, not this week in the ratings, but this week, Paramount Plus dropped the animated series Ark based on the video game Ark Survival Evolved. And I don't think anyone was anticipating this series to appear on Paramount Plus or anywhere else. I don't remember anything mentioning that this series was coming.
They dropped it as a surprise. It was absolutely not announced or marketed whatsoever.
Yeah, it was not announced, but this apparently had actually been in the can for some time, because I looked into it a little bit and it was apparently scheduled for back in 2022 at some point. And then another trailer mentioned a 2023 release, and then a video game site said, well, now it'll be sometime in 2024. And even though no one knew when, March 21st, surprise, here's six episodes. And apparently there's more to come. I have no idea if that indicates the quality of it. Not that that's stopping Paramount Plus, because obviously the Halo series is not great. We'll talk about it on what's new when that episode drops later in the week. But they got a crazy voice cast, and also smartly got the voice actress for the main character in the video game to voice that character.
Oh.
Yeah, I know it's a survival shooter. It's some weird mix of dinosaurs and technology type of thing. And I know it's certainly got its fans. I see it pop up all the time on Steam, especially when it goes on discount. So I'm not surprised that there's an anime series, but what the hell, Paramount? Market your stuff.
No, I really think that this animated series finally made it to Paramount Plus only because of the success of Halo. In fact, when I logged into Paramount Plus earlier today to see, no, that can't be streaming already. One of the three recommended shows to me was that animated series, which had been in the can for 2 years and Paramount Plus didn't want to release until suddenly video game adaptations are a big deal. And I just want to paint a picture for you all of the dark future we're going into, because while nothing's been announced, God help us, you know there's going to be a Halo spinoff at some point.
I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot in play here, and we could pick this conversation apart. It's surprisingly deep and nuanced, but let's start with the basic here, which is Ark doesn't make any sense as a video game franchise anyway. They had very modest expectations for it, and then suddenly they realized, wait, our thing has sold 4.5 million? We did not expect that many units sold. All right, our dinosaur game, what if we added like wyverns and other mystical creatures to it? So it stopped being realistic at that point and became nonsense, and that only helped. It now has 16.5 million units sold of Ark. If we look at some of the other things we have seen excel on Netflix, like The Witcher, that have dominated the charts, there is a common thread on all of these, which is there's a lot of eyeballs who have invested a lot of time playing the games. They're going to have interest in a television series. That's the hope here with Ark. It is probably a low investment thing. And the other part of the conversation that's awkward is this probably reeks of desperation on Paramount's part, where right now, now, they were like, we got to get people watching anything we can on Paramount Plus so that it doesn't die. A lot of this was surprising, but Kim, just to a larger point, I asked you specifically about this. You can't think of any reason why you would release something without promotion, can you?
Unless you're Taylor Swift or Beyonce, which is the joke you made, and what's new in streaming. No, it would have to be something that people would be super excited about releasing as a surprise. This, I can't foresee it being super exciting to any but a few select people.
It's an interesting test in that you're kind of saying, well, if we drop Ark here, will Ark video game communities recognize it, pick it up, start hyping it and going, whoa, you got to see this cast? And then it might sneak out past those communities into other communities. It is a very low risk attempt, but it seems like a major roll of the dice where the upside is limited because you haven't brought awareness to the product. But we'll see. I think that this is a really fascinating conversation, what they're trying. I wouldn't have done it. I want to be clear. So you can go ahead and say, if Ark succeeds, I thought this was stupid, but we'll find out.
See what you did, Paramount Plus, by advertising Halo during the Super Bowl. This is what you caused. But it's almost like marketing works, which is something we've been trying to reiterate over the last couple months now.
They could have added two lines of, also, we're going to do Ark right after that. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have hurt them any.
Six goes to Formula One Drive to Survive from Netflix. 337 million minutes for 60 episodes. The sixth season of this arrived on February 23rd. I feel like we've seen it before. It's Formula One racing follows the season and sometimes drivers in particular. Mr. and Mrs. Smith from Prime Video is 7, 310 million minutes. House of Ninjas, colon Masters of the Air, 8th and 9th. Unfortunately, what two different shows. House of Ninjas is Netflix. Masters of the Air is Apple TV Plus. So that hangs around for another week. 287 million minutes for House of Ninjas. 271 minutes for Masters of the Air. And Originals wraps up with Griselda. That's been here for some time now. 253 million minutes from Netflix. Movies is led by Mea Culpa. It's Tyler Perry's Mea Culpa. It's not him apologizing for all the Madea movies. It's just, you know, another one of his dramas. 693 million minutes from Netflix.
Did not see that coming.
Yeah, this arrived on the 23rd, so it's just the weekend number. Did he sign any sort of deal with Netflix to make things exclusively for them, or is this just something he's just doing because he can?
Netflix has a first look deal with Tyler Perry, which means that they can definitely green light his projects, but he can take them elsewhere if Netflix passes.
And that deal is only like 3 weeks old. It's a new thing.
Oh, really? Okay. This is potentially the first of many.
It's either that, or they knew this was going to be a hit, or they knew that this already had become a hit, and they went ahead and signed him up, which they should do anyway. It's a natural fit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be in light of the success, or because they anticipated the success of this project, mm-hmm. that they decided to make this deal with Tyler Perry.
Yeah, the deal was signed on February 12th, and this started on, what, the 19th? So it was like the week before, which mean their metrics of I want to watch, which is the thing you can click ahead of time, were mm-hmm. probably outstanding.
New in second is Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, 598 million minutes from Netflix. It's a DreamWorks Animation release from Netflix, of course, because that's a thing now.
This movie bombed last summer, even though there wasn't a lot of kids' movies out around that time. I think everyone just went to see a Super Mario Brothers movie instead.
Pretty much, yes. This was a theatrical release from last year, just showing up on Netflix on the 20th of February. So that's most of the week, so it will probably drop some from here. And here's your ridiculous one for the week, The Abyss from 2023, 529 million minutes from Netflix. We had to dig a little to find out what this is, but this is a Swedish thriller.
So not the James Cameron movie.
No, not the James Cameron movie. That's why it has that. I'm glad they included 2023. Otherwise, we would have assumed it was. But yes, it arrived on February 16th. So this is actually the entire week of viewing. But because it was new content, you know, that's how Netflix works.
So our government is worried about TikTok, but they're not worried about the fact that Netflix can make people watch a Swedish movie that we've never heard of. That's mind control, Tim.
It is. Yes. Oppenheimer from Peacock was the top movie last week as it arrived on the streaming service then, 487 million minutes. I'm curious if it hangs around long enough for us to see any sort of Oscar bump, which would happen in a few weeks from this time. Dune, we saw a return last week, credited to Hulu, Max, and Netflix, because Netflix is getting rid of it at the end of February, so it's still here, 452 million minutes. as Dune 2 arrived in theaters at the start of March. Moana gets a big jump from previous numbers, 384 million minutes from Disney+. It actually topped the Super Mario Brothers movie in 374 million minutes from Netflix. Eighth goes to Thanksgiving, Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, of course, 348 million minutes from Netflix. This was a theatrical release from last November, of course, that arrived on February 17th. Players, we saw arrive last week in ninth, 222 million minutes from Netflix, and we welcome back Encanto. I haven't seen you in a minute, 221 million minutes from Disney+. So they're back to two movies on the chart this week.
About 600 million between Moana and Encanto combined. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a jump from what we've seen in the past. And like I said, it's been some time since we've seen Encanto. Usually Moana is what is our baseline for Disney Plus for the week. And also, the Marvels is gone. That's what we figured would happen. So under 220 for its third week. Acquired is 10 shows we have seen before, led once again by Bluey, 1 billion minutes for 150 episodes. New in second, we have more Netflixing and also a way to bury Max, because Warrior from 2019, 29 episodes, 948 million minutes. This was, of course, an HBO exclusive series that they canceled after three seasons.
Yes, based on a idea from Bruce Lee. It is a period series about warring gangs in Chinatown, I believe, in 19th century San Francisco. The third season of Warrior premiered in August on Max, but by December, Warner Bros. Discovery had announced that they had canceled the series and they were going to be licensing out the episodes to Netflix. The fact of the matter is that they had never really promoted it very much. It only started getting some attention by season three, which is probably why they should have kept it exclusively on Max. Because here you go, it lands on Netflix and suddenly it's number two on the acquired.
Yeah, with almost a billion too. So yeah, this actually is a full week of viewing because it arrived on the 16th of February, but that's still an impressive debut and also just makes Max just look more and more foolish every single time this happens with one of their shows or movies. True Detective, after finishing its season, is still here in fifth, still a decent 889 million minutes for 30 episodes. And The Blacklist has been here before, but it's back in 10th, 593 million minutes from Netflix. That's because the final season, the 10th, actually arrived on the 11th. So that was enough to get it back on chart for this week. 5 billion minutes between two Netflix shows. So that's what, you know, what people did in the middle of February was they watched a whole bunch of Netflix, but actually it was most people watching one show on Netflix because I doubt there's a big overlap between Avatar and Love is Blind audiences.
Okay, thank you, Tim. In our green lights and cancellations this week, we have the best news ever as Apple TV Plus has announced they'll be adapting William Gibson's Neuromancer into a series.
This is a series I've been waiting for all my life, besides maybe adapting The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy again, and maybe doing it properly this time, or seeing a sequel to The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. This is, I think, maybe one of the most anticipated adaptations of my life.
There was an X-Files episode that was so inspired by Neuromancer that like they had a copy of the book in the episode, and that was 30 years ago. That's how long this has been coming for us, and thank God it's finally here, and I hope it has a better fate than The Peripheral, and where is my snow crash? That's what I want to know.
Prime Video is in talks with Travis Kelce to host a reboot of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
That fifth grader could never cover him.
Amazon Studios and MGM are teaming with Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Showalter to produce the holiday comedy Oh What Fun.
Showalter's Amazon Studios romance The Idea of You, starring Anne Hathaway, was very well received at South by Southwest this year, and the studio seems very happy to continue their partnership with the filmmaker.
Disney has greenlit a Wizards of Waverly Place sequel from stars Selena Gomez and David Henry for Disney Channel and Disney Plus.
David, this brings to mind a conversation we had last week about how season two of Monsters at Work was going to go to Disney Channel before coming to Disney Plus. Why Disney Channel first?
We're suspecting, we don't know this for sure, but we're suspecting it's an accounting trick. And this is something that Bob Chapek got in trouble for doing. He was intentionally hiding the expense of some streaming series by airing them on linear networks and then sticking the cost of the production on linear networks. Disney is now doing that with these joint products, but they're also doing it above board where they're saying, hey, we're going to air this here first. So it is going to be a Disney Channel show. We're going to write it off in the Disney Channel general category. So when you start looking at our streaming and whether or not it's profitable at the end of the year, this won't be on that budget. And that's a smart way to do things, because if you are being overly criticized unfairly, you might as well leverage all the market platforms you have.
We mentioned a few weeks back that the Hulu and Disney Plus hit Goosebumps would have a new cast for its second season. It's now been revealed that the new cast will include David Schwimmer.
Fine by me.
Hulu and FX have had success with this anthology format with shows like American Horror Story. In the end, though, the star here is R.L. Stine and Goosebumps.
Over at Netflix, their tennis docuseries Breakpoint may be over after two seasons, but Netflix isn't out of the tennis business entirely, as they'll be doing a new docuseries focusing exclusively on Carlos Alcaraz.
Yeah, Netflix has had success with other docuseries based on golf, on Formula One, as we mentioned in the ratings earlier, but their tennis show didn't really do very well. That was unusual for them, but I guess maybe they've decided to focus on one specific star. He may be more TV friendly than trying to do a series based on the entire tennis circuit. So we'll see how this one does.
He's a very likable individual, so I could see it performing well. Netflix has announced who will be joining Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw in Joe Barton's next thriller, Black Doves.
Joe Barton created the well-received Netflix series, Giri Haji, and the cast of Black Doves includes Finn Bennett, who we recently saw in the latest series of True Detective, Luther Ford, who played Prince Harry in The Crown, and Tracy Ullman, that I don't have to tell you who she is.
Right. And finally, there's some bad news for Neil Patrick Harris. His series, Uncoupled, was over at Netflix after only one season. Creator Darren Star, who had produced it for MTV Entertainment, like his show Emily in Paris, was set to bring it home to Showtime on Paramount Plus, but the writer's strike delayed the start of season two. This gave Paramount enough time to reconsider. There will be no season two.
That's unfortunate. Neil Patrick Harris is a very likable person, and I was glad to see that he got himself a whole new series on Netflix, but evidently Netflix decided that the ratings on Uncoupled were not good enough, and, you know, things happen during strikes, and it's unfortunate that Paramount decided not to move ahead with season two. Hopefully Neil Patrick Harris finds himself another series soon.
As always, we wrap up the show with what's been keeping us busy, and I have watched now, as mentioned last week, the Taylor Swift Eras Tour, Taylor's version, on Disney Plus. I've probably watched it more than once, maybe more than twice. I think it is just incredibly well produced. She just absolutely kills it during the show. Every bit of praise the tour got is deserved. Every bit of praise the movie version got is deserved. And if you have any interest at all, I suggest you watch it. You will find something to like. Raul, how about you?
Yeah, I was going to mention the Eras Tour as well. I'm telling you, folks, whoever broke that girl's heart, you should be ashamed of yourself. If you are watching the Eras Tour on Disney Plus, and this is Taylor's version, there is, of course, extra content you'll want to watch after the credits. There is a full 30 more minutes of content after the credits that you want to see. I will mention that I did watch season two of The Traitors on Peacock. A lot of people talked about how it was as good or even better than season one. I don't know that that's necessarily true. It was interesting to see how the contestants on this show split up into cliques based on the type of reality show they had appeared on, whether they'd been contestants on competitive reality shows or more of the docu-style Real Housewives type shows, the Bravo contestants. They were really splitting into cliques, and that really influenced how this season of The Traitors ended. I do feel we are very much right now at peak Traitors, where we've got The Traitors from the UK, Australia, I think New Zealand. And I know that in Canada, they're airing a version of The Traitors as well. You can catch most of these on Peacock right now. I don't know how much longer it's going to be as successful as it is right now at this moment. It may go on for years and years, but it probably will never have as much buzz as it does at the moment. I do think that they have a chance to go with one last gasp with the casting. If they just keep casting, you know, random reality celebrities, it's really not going to click very much. I feel there's a chance here to do something crazy. Cast reality TV show hosts, cast Julie Chen, cast Phil Keegan, cast Jeff Probst. Put them on this show because it is such a wild assortment of competitors. They have all kinds of people from all kinds of walks of life competing on this show. Do that for season 3. After that, you know, we may be talking about the Traitors season 12 at some point, but no one's ever going to talk about anything like a show where the reality hosts had to compete against each other.
Yeah, it is such funny how it's just such a wide array of different types of shows. Of course, you have Survivor contestants, you have people from Big Brother, you have Real World / The Challenge veterans, and then you have like Real Housewives. And you're just like, and it's just like, wait, how does this work? But somehow it manages to.
And in fact, the folks like the Real Housewives really, really begrudged the competitor contestants.
Right.
Because it was not the show for them. They didn't understand how to play these games. And then you bring on people from like The Challenge and Survivor and The Amazing Race, and these people showed up ready to play and they just owned the other contestants. And it was so sad to see happen, but at the same time, you understand you're playing against gamers here and they were just going to destroy you in the end.
All right, Tim, what's been keeping you busy?
I've danced around it the last couple of weeks, but I finally had more time to play The Thaumaturge. It is a detective RPG, I guess is the best way you can describe it. It is set in like early 1900s Warsaw. You are the titular character, a thaumaturge, which basically means you are one of the few people able to see these supernatural entities. And the best way I can describe them is they're basically demonic Pokemon because they tend to help you in the turn-based combat, which is pretty clever. You're tracking them down for various reasons. I haven't quite figured out what the main story is. Basically, you're returning home after the death of your father, who you were estranged from, but I guess it was mysterious circumstances, so maybe you're investigating that. It is pretty compelling. It's well-written. It seems to be pretty long if you want it to be, but there's definitely like lots of replayability in terms of choices that you've made in the dialogue. You either unlock or lock you out from future decisions, so I'm excited to keep playing it. I wish I had a better way to describe it. It's on Steam. It is definitely pretty compelling. Do check out the trailer for it if it sounds interesting to you, but I'm definitely into it so far.
Awesome. And David, how about you?
So I think we've beaten Sephiroth and saved Aerith. Is that right, Kim? Do I have that right?
Well,
we've beat the game. I have no idea other than that. There's a 30-minute cutscene, and we're just like mouths agape the whole time. And somehow that was slightly more comprehensible than what we did after that, which is we're 3 episodes into the 3-body problem. Kim's read the book. It was new to me. It is exploding my synapses. They're firing every which way. There are conversations Kim and I have had in the past about the methodology of the universe, the inner workings, scale, structure, that sort of thing. Conversations about cancer. All of it in just 3 episodes, they've already touched on parts of it. This is a philosophical treatise that has a bunch of people you know from Game of Thrones and the one absolutely terrifying crazy woman from Baby Driver. And it's a lot. I mean, it is a tour de force. And I don't know what's going to happen for here. We've got 5 episodes left. And I'll be honest with you, even with March Madness on, I kind of want to binge them. So I think that's a good sign in and of itself. But the key conceit is some of the best minds, the best scientists on the planet are dying by suicide because they're having these internal visions of these countdown clocks. And when the clock gets to 0, bad things happen. So it is a challenging concept in a lot of ways. And Kim, I'm curious, having read the book, how are you enjoying the series?
I think it's very compelling. It's got a really good core group of actors. They've done enough differently here that I'm finding myself wondering how they're going to handle a variety of things. So that helps to add to some intrigue for me.
I'm not ready to recommend it yet, and I fully believe it's not going to be for everybody, but I'm pretty sure I'm all in on this.
Thank you for listening to Streaming Into the Void. Please consider subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts, and we welcome your feedback. Remember that we're on social media at Streaming Void and online at streamingvoid.com. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/streamingvoid. Be sure to watch for us again next week.